Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new segment of Nintendo World Report Connectivity. I am your host for this segment, Alexander Kulafi, and with me to discuss a plethora of Nintendo news, ooh, Neil Ronahan.
Yes, hello.
And Scott Thompson.
Hello!
Hi, Scott. We haven't recorded in fucking forever.
I know, but I feel like I've, like, been here with you because I've edited the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, see, I don't edit, so I'm just like, who is this Scott Thompson fellow?
Fuck this guy. Yeah, so, like, I feel like I've been a part of, like, the Tony Hawk stuff and the, what'd you guys do?
I mean, side note, completely unrelated, I did get Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4 and Underground off of eBay this week. 4 came in yesterday. So I'll be playing more of those because Tony Hawk fucking rules. I think I might be doing something on the site.
Nice.
Play every Tony Hawk game.
Why not?
Okay, yeah, let's get to the thing at hand.
So, as you may know, Nintendo did a Japan exclusive 3DS Nintendo Direct
this
Friday morning.
Which seemed like a really big Direct. Like, I was
talking
to some people and they're like, why the fuck was it just E3?
It's because they gotta have directs too, because they already went down the direct hole. So I think they probably feel some obligation to keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there hasn't really been like a direct like this in a long time. I mean, I guess the E3 one like sort of counts the digital event. But as far as like a broad, non-singular game focused direct, we got one in February?
Maybe a month or... No, I know, because we had the Smash one in April.
Yeah,
because
we had the Smash one, we had the Mario Kart one, we had the random Tomodachi Life one, we had Hyrule Warriors, there was a Yo-Kai Watch one in Japan. I think there was another game-specific one in Japan.
They've been getting pretty creative with them.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like that we've kind of reached that Nintendo Week threshold with Nintendo Directs, although, honestly, this one was a pretty cut-and-dry, like, old-school Direct. I have a feeling that the ones that come out of Japan are usually pretty staid and boring, because, I don't know.
Which is... Well, I guess I like some of the weird Nintendo humor, but yeah. I do like the big pack directs that's just news, news, reveal, reveal,
yeah.
Reveal.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely an appeal to that, but I feel like stuff like, you know, the digital event had this, like, really, like fucking Robot Chicken was on that. Like, and it wasn't out of place. I think that was the biggest thing about the Robot Chicken stuff at the digital event was that, okay, at first you might have been like, oh, what the hell is that Seth Green doing a voice of, like, some random video game guy? Oh, it's entirely Robot Chicken. Once you realized what it was just like, oh yeah, I accept it. And you move on.
Sure. So they had their big Japan-exclusive 3DS Nintendo Direct. And the other territories, surprisingly, had press releases stuffed with so much news it warranted an emergency podcast segment mm-hmm. planned only this morning.
Yeah, which is funny because a lot of the news that was in those press releases had very little to do with this Nintendo Direct.
Yeah, they probably could have done separate Nintendo Directs.
Yeah.
But I do have a theory that we're going to get into with our first news story about why they didn't do a Nintendo Direct.
Lay it on us.
So, and also note, in the interest of time, we're only going to be covering the big reveals from this morning. If you want to see more about stuff like how those Kirby spin-off eShop games are now available on 3DS, you can do so at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Yeah. And then let me know if we're ever in the same place, and then we can play Kirby Fighters Deluxe. Because we can't play online.
The biggest story from either of these press things today is that there is a new 3DS and new 3DS XL. And I don't mean that there's a new 3DS and a new 3DS XL.
It is a new it's really dumb.
They announced two 3DS models coming to Japan this October. I'm basically reading from our story. Two models, new 3DS and new 3DS LL, aka XL. Both models contain faster CPUs, quicker download speeds, and colorful face buttons akin to the Super Famicom.
Yeah.
Hardware-wise, the models also contain amiibo support, better 3D viewing, a new button that helps control camera movement, similar to the C-stick found in
As far as I can tell, and I don't know if there's been 100% confirmation on this, but it basically just functions like a Circle Pad Pro.
Right, and then things are moved around.
But it's got, like, I don't know how the weird little nubbin, like, I don't really get how that will work. Like, I have a little faith, but it does kind of remind me of, like, a laptop, like that trackball thing.
Ugh, yeah, well, I'm sure they've, like, tested it and found that it works fine enough. But I was surprised that they didn't just do a full-size Circle Pad and then just put it right above the buttons, move the buttons down a little bit, and then you would have this sort of like uniform setup with the gamepad and with the, you know, with the Pro controller. Like, why not do that and have all your control methods be sort of uniform in that way? Now you've got this kind of weird offshoot that's somewhat similar, but you've got that little nub. It's kind of more in the corner. It's just weird.
Yeah. And then they also moved the cartridge slot is now on the bottom of the system, which...
Yeah, and the stylus slot. Yeah,
which takes a lot of getting used to. They have moved the stylus all over the place on the 3DS, because on the original, it was, you know, you took it out of, like, the top, so to speak. On the XL, it's on the side, and then on this new model, it's on the bottom.
Isn't that...
I think the side is the best.
Yeah, side because...
Go ahead.
I mean, side just because it's so easy to slip it out because your hands are holding in near that position, whereas every other position you have to, like, move your hands unless you're holding it like a crazy person.
What were you saying, Scott?
I was just going to say they moved, like, some of the buttons, too. Like, isn't the power button not actually on the bottom now?
I think so.
Yeah, it seems like.
Yeah, and I forgot where that, like, the home, start, and select buttons were. I think they're still in the same spot.
Yeah.
And it uses micro SD, which, I mean, I'm not up on like memory formats. I don't know if that's better or not, but it's an
option.
Yeah. It's annoying to me. Cause like, I don't know. I have a bunch of SD cards. Now I have to get another memory card for this damn thing. Cause I mean, let's face it. I don't think I'm alone in this company when I say like, I'm buying this shit day one. But we don't know when that day one will be.
Well, yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, just some other tidbits. It's launching at 16,000 yen and 18,800 yen, which seems like the same price as the other two 3DSs, or at least close enough that I think they're just straight up replacing the old 3DSs.
Yeah, it might be a little bump. I'm not 100% sure what the prices are in Japan.
The smaller 3DS, like not the XL, but the smaller one, has a ton of... faceplates that you can replace, basically like an Xbox 360. And
better than all the special edition 3DS XLs, because it's like they all look really cool, but like I already have an XL. I'm not one of those people like Justin Berube who buys one of every 3DS XL. PS4.
If you noticed the I think the Japanese that really cool Smash Bros. Red 3DS
is now
going to be one of the new 3DSs in a new 3DS LL. Which means if that comes to America, that's probably how I'm gonna dive in.
Yeah, but I mean I know that I think that with Europe they straight up said that the new 3DS is not going to hit there until 2015. With Nintendo with America, we haven't heard confirmation either way. I do know, we unfortunately don't have anyone at PAX Prime, but there was some sort of behind the scene, or like there was some closed door event that I know has an embargo. I don't know 100% when that embargo is. We'll probably talk to a Nintendo rep on Monday, and try to find out a little bit about it, and then I probably won't be able to say shit about it. But as of now, you know, people were talking about it on NeoGAF that there was some sort of closed door event. At PAX Prime that was related to Smash Brothers on 3DS. So maybe that is kind of the unveiling of, you know, maybe we're going to see this new 3DS come out alongside the release of Smash Brothers or something. Like, who knows? I think that's wishful thinking. I think the more likely scenario is new 3DS in 2015 alongside the release of Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate or Xenoblade Chronicles.
Yeah, well, that's our second story, but we can at least immediately say that the biggest feature of this is that, like the DSi, its increased power means that it will get games like Xenoblade Chronicles that are exclusive to the new 3DS and new 3DS XL.
I wrote an entire editorial about this that you can go read. I don't like that they're splitting the user base like that, because what that kind of says to me is, given Nintendo's track record on it, is that... Okay, the Xenoblade Chronicles, that's a pretty big deal. However, the one thing with that is that I don't think that's really going to drive people to like, oh, I need to upgrade to buy this game. People might upgrade. Like, we're going to upgrade. And for me, upgrading is regardless of Xenoblade Chronicles. That's kind of a nice bonus, but that's it. But, I mean, you saw with DSi, you saw with, you know, even Game Boy Color to a lesser extent. Just people, you know... not really getting into the exclusive features. And then when you have stuff divided like that, you run into that, like, that weird Kinect situation where developers aren't really going to take advantage of it. And if they do, like, it's going to be throwaway.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be more than five or six exclusive big Nintendo titles on it. In fact, I think it's going to be Xenoblade, maybe one other kind of big title, and then a bunch of games that are better on the new 3DS, but can still be played comfortably, like Pokemon. And when they do a Pokemon
run like shit, maybe they'll be able to have it be in 3D the whole time.
Exactly. Well, that was the first thing I thought of. Like, this is so they can make Pokemon properly.
Yeah.
But this ties in directly to why I think they did not have a Nintendo Direct. I think they did not have a Nintendo Direct because they did not want to show off a new 3DS that would be coming out in 2015 when they really want to sell a lot of 3DSs with the release of Smash Bros. A month from now.
Yeah. I mean, but
and I think that might be the whole reason, because they can't just not show it off, and they don't want to fully advertise a system that's coming out after the holiday season.
I mean, and I think that's kind of the, maybe a failure to an extent of just Nintendo as a worldwide organization, is that when you do have stuff like this, it's like, okay, if you're clued in at all, and you were like, you know, for example, Andy Gergen, he has an original 3DS, and he has been contemplating getting an XL for a long time. He's not getting an XL this year because he's going to be waiting for the new 3DS. And I don't think that's going to be an isolated incident. I think you're going to have a lot of people that were either thinking of buying a 3DS or thinking of upgrading their 3DS, and they're just going to hold off and wait. And it might not be, you know, some huge grave impact on sales, but I don't think, you know, the new 3DS being known that it will be coming eventually, I don't think having that news out there and having it be so far off is really going to help sales.
Yeah, they should have revealed this in January and did, like, a worldwide, or at least reveal it in March and put it out in March alongside maybe Xenoblade.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the reason why is, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I think 3DS sales in Japan are really cooling down, so that's probably...
'Cause it's Japan?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, 3DS sales in Japan, I don't think were ever really is in terrible danger as they were in America and Europe. And, I mean, 3DS sales worldwide are all kind of cooling off, but I think Japan, it like, fell off a cliff. Like, I think Vita is reasonably competing with 3DS in Japan, you know, as much as Vita can compete with 3DS.
Sure. I will probably get this, and I know some people are really angry. They're calling Nintendo shitty business people, and you know what? There are valid complaints.
People are crazy. I don't think their complaints are that valid. I think it is a questionable business decision because it splits the user base. But I think people that are livid about it, like, I don't know, like, if you really want to play Xenoblade Chronicles on your 3DS, you gotta get the new system. Like, if you really wanted to play the new Zelda game, well, you're gonna have to buy a Wii U. Like, and it's not like the 3DS, I mean, okay, maybe it's not lasting as long as the DS, but sorry, the DS was super, super successful. The 3DS, not as much.
I mean, it's still doing good, but you can tell its lifespan is being accelerated.
Yeah, well, I mean, the 3DS, I mean, if we go to the broader picture for a little bit, I mean, honestly, the 3DS peaked last year. 2013 was, I actually, 2012 and 2013 were both tremendous years for the system, and 2014 so far is on tail to being pretty terrible. They actually, I think at the end of 2013, they started to even feel the effects of that because they missed their projection. So, I mean, this is definitely the reason why they're introducing this new 3DS, is that they want to, you know, give the system a shot in the arm.
Yeah. And even though I do think some people are justified in saying, like you said, that the audience might end up being split as a result, I really want this system.
Yeah, like, I do too. Even if I think that Xenoblade Chronicles from the video that they showed, it doesn't... I mean, it's cool that it's running, and it looks like it's running smoothly, but, like, it doesn't look as beautiful as the Wii version.
It looks like Donkey Kong 3D.
Yeah, it really does. And, like, because I was all excited when I heard about it, and then I watched the video, I'm like, you know, this makes me just want to go back and play it on Wii.
Yeah.
Which is good, because I should go back and play more of that game, but... Not that excited for the 3DS version, the more I think about it. But I guess one last thing on like the, mm-hmm. the new 3DS is that it could maybe it'll develop into something like the expansion pack on the N64, which wasn't really required for too many games, but it was just one of those things where, like, you know, maybe we will have a situation where there will be a game, not necessarily a first-person shooter, but a game like Perfect Dark, where, you know, it's functional on the old 3DS, but if you really want to play it the right way, you need to get the new 3DS. So that way, yes, the audience is split, but it's not like you get the game and it doesn't work. Because I think that's the thing that's the bigger issue, is that you just, you know, you have a fraction of the audience can even play this game. And I think that might be one way that they could get around that, is have games where it's just like, oh, it's just better on this. It's not like, or there's an extra mode, as opposed to, you know, this game flat out won't work on anything else.
What say you about all this, Scott?
I don't know. I'm not too worried about the, like, segmenting of the user base. Like, playing the Vita and then going back to the 3DS is kind of hard sometimes. Like, the hardware just isn't impressive. The games are better in most circumstances. But just using the hardware isn't as, like, fun and exciting as the Vita is. So I'm looking forward to it. And we haven't really talked about, like, the different themes and stuff like that. But just the capabilities it does seem to have kind of puts it on par with the Vita in my mind. And they didn't really say anything about, like, if the screens would necessarily look better. But either way, like, just something that performs a little bit better, and as a whole, that just, like, on a system level runs better, I'm very excited about it. Yeah. I mean, watching this direct got me, like, super excited about the 3DS again. Like, I will for sure get this day one, and I'll probably play Xenoblade Chronicles on it, because I love that game.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is, like, the idea, it's kind of like Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D. I think it's a perfect comparison, because I think that when push comes to shove, the Wii version of Donkey Kong Country Returns is the better version. But it's really mm-hmm. nice playing the game portably. And I think that's how I'm going to fall on Xenoblade, is that, like, if you were to ask me, okay, I'm going to get one of those versions, you know, I'd say try to track down the Wii version, but I will probably wind up playing the 3DS version more.
Yeah, just moving on a little to the Xenoblade 3DS, we already talked about it some. I think this is an interesting announcement for many reasons.
It was
not
rumored
a bad
for
announcement.
A long time.
Rumored?
Yeah. Like,
well,
not,
I knew
not
there
like
was the Monolith game.
Not consistently, but there was talk about a Monolith 3DS game that they were working on. And I remember hearing a few things about how it might just be a port of Xenoblade. And every time it came up, people were like, oh, that wouldn't work on 3DS. And they're right.
And, well, now it can.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, it can work on new 3DS.
Right.
It can't work on old 3DS. Even if new 3DS becomes old. But it'll still work on new 3DS even when the next 3DS comes out.
I just think this is a great response to a lot of things, because it's going to expand the audience of Xenoblade Chronicles a lot, not because the demand wasn't there, well, because, as we know, the demand built up, but because the demand built up, now Nintendo will have something to sell to people.
I think, and I'm not 100% sure if this is on the outline later, but I think that it could work in a Fire Emblem sort of way. Yes, technically Xenoblade Chronicles did come out on Wii, but it was like the weird GameStop exclusive thing that was weird. But Shulk's going to be in Smash Brothers in kind of a similar way that, you know, Marth and Roy were in Melee. And I think that was Melee came out a year or two before we ever got a Fire Emblem game in North America. And maybe it is something that, like, you know, you'll have Shulk and Smash Brothers, and that'll create more awareness for the series, and you kind of want to do that because a pretty marquee Wii U game that's going to be coming out in 2015, supposedly, is Xenoblade Chronicles X. So you could have a situation much like they did with Donkey Kong Country Returns and Tropical Freeze, where you can introduce people to this game that they might have skipped, more likely that they skipped Xenoblade Chronicles than Donkey Kong. And then drop the new version of it, you know, later that year or the next year.
It's super smart that they're bringing Xenoblade, like, closer into the Nintendo family. Because, I mean, yes, it's always been a Nintendo game. No one's going to really disagree with that. But it's better that they're establishing it as a clear, this is one of our franchises. Shulk is one of our characters. Yeah. He is one of our guys. Which is why they're doing these announcements. Why Xenoblade Chronicles X is becoming a big deal. Well, obviously there's Nintendo not having a ton of Wii U games ready, but there's also Xenoblade Chronicles on 3DS. There's Shulk in Smash Brothers, yeah, where his moveset has to do with Monado in really specific fan service yeah ways.
Like, it's kind of like when I was reading about his moveset, like, at first it kind of, it's been a while since I've even touched that game, but it made my head spin because I'm just like, oh god, all the Monado arts, and there's like six different versions that you can switch to, and they're all minutely different. Like, it's just, I like how the more we see about Smash characters, the more that, you know, there's not even like the, I mean, there are going to be clone characters, we know that. But it seems like even the, like, the new characters, it's not like, you know, like the Ganondorf Captain Falcon thing where they're completely different characters, but they have the exact same moveset with just like one's more powerful. Like this one with the new characters, they're really new and interesting takes on characters in the series. And I do love that Shulk has entered this family. And it's nice to see.
It's a little unfortunate that I won't talk too much about the leak that is basically confirmed by this reveal.
Yeah, although I did see some people being like, no, man, it's not confirmed. But, like, the video was almost exactly what we saw. No, man, it's not confirmed.
The only thing I'm going to say about the roster, I won't spoil anything here, but yeah, the only thing that I saw on the roster that was leaked that is unfortunate is that Shulk is the only Nintendo character in the roster row that is devoted to third-party characters.
Well, I think that, I mean, going off of that roster more, is that, one, if you look at that character select screen from the leak close-up, it does not look like a Sakurai character select screen. There's, like, you know, characters from the same series aren't next to each other. It doesn't really seem to make sense in spots. I definitely buy into the thing that people are bandying about, that there are still a couple characters that we do not know of. And I think that, like, I mean, there's definitely room for them, and I think that might shuffle it around so that way it's not as silly as having, like, Shulk next to Mega Man and Pac-Man and Sonic. He'll be next to, yeah, Snake instead. No, I don't know. We don't know.
I hope so. I mean, I did see the initial roster select, like the one that you get when you unlock the game, which is, like, I think 30-something characters, and Shulk is still comfortably out at the bottom.
Yeah.
So, like, 10 unlocks later, it's still just him and the third-party characters.
Oh, was that the thing that
characters?
Was on the Japanese 3DS? I think I saw a picture of that. I didn't realize that was the base unlock screen, or the base character screen. Right? Is that where it was?
I think so.
Yeah. That's probably what it was.
I don't know. For some reason, I still hope that that Smash Bros. Leak is completely fake and it was all just one big ruse.
Yeah.
Because, like, there are still sketchy things about that roster, even though it's probably 100% correct now.
I'm pretty sure it's right.
I know it is, but I still don't want to believe it. Like, there's one unlockable character, one who's in the top row, name starts with a B. I'll just say that. And his Smash Bros. Like character select character model looks like an action figure. It that's one thing you can look at next time you look at the roster. But, like, there is a lot of sketchy shit with that, even though it's probably 100% real. But maybe that's just my mind talking.
I think it's people looking for things that are wrong with that, and it turned out that a lot of the things that we thought were wrong about it were totally fine.
You know what? At the very least, that's a great roster for this game.
Yeah. And it was a fun couple of days.
Well, what I love about it is that roster is going to, for sure, expand with DLC. Like, we're not really going to talk about the Mario Kart stuff on here, because it wasn't related to all the news from today, but given what happened with Mario Kart, like, I fully believe Smash will expand within a year of coming out, like, for sure.
I am not 100% sold on that, just because it does kind of, like, here's the difference between Smash and Mario Kart. There wasn't anyone from Mario Kart going out saying, hey, probably not going to do DLC. Like, it was kind of, everyone sort of assumed that there was going to be Mario Kart 8 DLC. There was no one at Nintendo that was saying, like, hey, we're not going to do any DLC for this, guys. But Sakurai has said a couple times, and granted, he could have changed his mind, or Nintendo made him change his mind, that, you know, he doesn't want to have DLC be a big major part of it.
It's also, at least I consider it to be a fighting game. And when it's a fighting game that's taken seriously on some level, including DLC, kind of hurts the hardcore fan base a little.
Yeah. I don't know that it hurt. I don't know that it hurts it, but I know that there's more that goes into, you know, adding a new character than like in Mario Kart, where it's just like, oh yeah, you can pretty much throw in whoever, just use like whatever weight class you want to use. Yeah, I know. I know.
Yeah, because you have to kind of like rebalance Smash Brothers if you add in DLC. That's the one thing against it, and that's the one thing. For anyone that was keeping up the leak, there was part of it that was talking about, like, oh, these five characters are going to be DLC. And as far as I know, I think that was confirmed to be complete bullshit.
Yeah, that just sounds like someone who was getting his jollies in.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things about that leak and where it might have came from. And from what I've heard, a lot of those things are completely right.
Next up, we got Amiibo pricing and launch lineup revealed. The first dozen Amiibo figures have been detailed and are now available for pre-order. Each figure will be available for $12.99. No launch good date price. Is listed, but it's obviously going to launch alongside Smash Bros. Wii U.
Yeah, good price.
Mm-hmm.
That's
perfect.
That's what I have to say about that. I mean, it's definitely, you know, I have a feeling there's going to be people that are like, oh, it's too expensive, but I don't think those people understand the cost of action figures in the real world. I don't know if I actually got a couple of them. Jack Specific has been, they're licensing with Nintendo, and they've had a couple figures out there. And I got, you know, the little Mario one, the Yoshi one, the Skyward Sword Link one, and they were all like $8 or $9 a pop. And those things are, I mean, they look nice, but they are like, I was messing around with Link and his arm fell off. And it went back into place, but like, those things aren't made that well. Like, they are cheap-ass figures for, like, $8 or $9. And that's why, like, Amiibo, when I heard $12.99, like, I was expecting $15 a pop.
Yeah.
So $12.99, I mean, yeah, it's only $2 less, but that seems to be a fair price for what looks to be a pretty solid build quality and, you know, something that, even though I think that the functionality for Smash Brothers in particular, you're going to be able to use with other games, which is pretty cool.
Do you know if they said specifically that the Smash Bros. Ones will work as if it was part of the Mario Kart wave or the Toad wave?
I don't know. They've been very cagey about all that. They've been very cagey about a lot of stuff with Amiibo, which is also what worries me about it. Like, I'm going to get the figures regardless because I think that the figures look cool.
Right.
So even if I, like, use them in Smash Brothers and think that Amiibos in Smash Brothers are dumb, which I kind of think that's how I'm going to feel, I'll still have, like, Marth in figure form. Like, that's pretty cool. I didn't think I'd get that without, like, buying one of the Figmas for $80.
Mm-hmm.
So, just to list off the 12 that will be available this holiday season, we got Mario, Peach, Link, Samus, Yoshi, Donkey Kong, Pikachu, Kirby, Fox, Marth, Villager, and Wii Fit Trainer. So, I ask you this. Scott, which ones will you buy?
Oh, jeez. I don't know. Yoshi for sure. Like, that's easy. Sure. Because I love Yoshi and everything. I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of Neil. Like Neil on this one. Like, I'll probably end up getting all of them because I'm terrible with money and, like, I think they look cool. yeah. I don't really have any interest of using them in Smash Brothers. I mean, unless we learn more about it. But the idea of kind of just, like, putting in this CPU character to, like, help you out. I don't know. That doesn't...
Like,
really
I'll mess around with it for sure. I just don't expect to be taken by it. Like, I hope I'm wrong. But
yeah.
I don't think I will be.
And I've never played Skylanders or any of those games or, like, Disney Infinity. So, like, I don't really know what to expect at this point. But it even sounds like what we've heard so far doesn't really utilize them on the level that those games do, where they're, like, instrumental in playing the game. Which is kind of a good thing, if you think about it. I mean, I don't know if I, like... want to have to buy these to, like, be able to play as these characters in Smash Bros. Or something absurd like that, you know? But it does make me wonder if at some point we'll get a game like Disney Infinity where they really are, like, you have to have them, you know, like, if that could be in the pipe.
I would love Nintendo Infinity.
Yeah, they could do some really cool stuff with it. To me, Nintendo Infinity would be sort of like the Subspace Emissary from Smash Bros., on that level of just, like, crazy crossover, like, levels inspired by all these different franchises, like, all these characters playing together. Like, that's what it would be, for sure.
Yeah.
Except better, because it wouldn't be tied to the Smash Brothers engine. Like, it could really play, like, a platformer or, like, a Zelda dungeon or, you know, whatever they're emulating at the time.
That would be super cool. Like, almost like NES Remix, but, like,
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. I don't know. Exactly, yeah.
And Neil, you think you're getting all of them?
Yeah, no, I've been down this road before. I still outside of the Skylanders Spyro's Adventure, in which I have all 32 fucking figures from that, calm down on Giants and Trap and Swap Force, and I don't even know if I will get anything outside of what comes with the review for Trap Team. I've very much calmed down off of the Skylanders obsession, but dude, you put Mario on a pedestal, and I'll probably buy him.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to get that aggressive as to spend $140 on plastic for a game that probably won't utilize these figures that well. I'm probably just getting Villager and Pikachu because Pokemon.
Villager is another one that it's like it's a Villager. Like, of course you're going to get that. Come on.
Yeah, I'm just in it for the figures and for the hope that this potentially paves the way for Nintendo Kart, or at least more Mario Kart DLC down the line. Like, I really want to race as Pikachu.
That would be pretty cool. I mean, there's amiibo support for Mario Kart 8. We don't know what it is, but it's something they're talking about.
It seems like they're going to do waves of this every 4 to 6 months, which sounds mostly reasonable,
Yeah. Depending
on what they actually have for support, because there's going to be a Mario Kart line for sure. There's going to be a Smash Bros. Line for sure.
Captain Toad,
and then I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of lines that are like Mario Party and Captain Toad.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious to see how they carry this all out over the long haul. It's going to be I hope it does very well for them. But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting.
Sure. It's Nintendo's big question mark.
Yeah.
Our second-to-last story, Ultimate NES Remix, a game that was announced this morning, and we still don't really know anything about
it. Yeah, except for there will be 16 8-bit games in it. They don't know if, like, they're ones that we saw on NES Remix, or, like, mixture of ones from 1 and 2. That's kind of what I assume.
Yeah, without getting into, like, third-party, you can't really find 16 Nintendo NES Remix games that don't consist of the ones in
because there's NES Remix at least 1 and 2. 30 across those two.
Probably more.
Yeah, well, I think there were like maybe there were 16 in each or something like that. I forget exactly.
Something like that, or maybe like about 30.
Yeah, but it's coming out. I think December 7th or December 5th.
December 5th.
Yeah, November
alongside with the Wii pack of 1 and 2.
And then it's coming out in Europe a month earlier on November 7th, the 3DS version. I don't think Europe has the pack announced yet, and it's gonna be $30 retail game.
They're pumping out these games quick.
Yeah, I think they're probably people are buying them, and they're not that hard to make.
Right.
Because I do get the vibe that, like, the first one came out, and they're like, hey, we should make another one.
Yep.
I don't think that game had a long development time.
And in a way, I think it's almost like kind of a pet project for Nintendo. Like,
yeah,
I'm sure, like, whoever ends up working on it loves it, right? Like, how fun would that be?
The director of it was just a dude at EAD Tokyo who was working on 3D World and just started fucking around with this.
Right.
Like, that's the story of NES Remix. And then I think, like, cause I think he was doing it in his spare time. And then I think, Indie Zero is the company that developed them. So, but I mean, the director is, Hayashida. And he's one of the dudes over at EAD Tokyo. And he just thought this was a cool idea and started working on it. And then they ran with it.
Yeah, $30, 16 of the best games from NES Remix 1 and 2. Put them in 3D. And then I think they're probably going to add some new crossover challenges.
Yeah,
they didn't say that,
online...
but it sounds like that's what they're going to have to do to...
Yeah, there's going to be online leaderboards. Championship mode is going to return.
Mm-hmm.
No, looks pretty cool. Like, I think I'm totally in for that, because NES Remix is totally a game that I would play on the go.
Yeah, it's, I hope they do something creative with it. I don't think they're going to, because they were talking about a few months ago. I wonder if NES Remix on 3DS would be an okay idea. And then 2 months later, they announced it for coming out.
Yeah, you know why? Because they started developing it after that story, and it's coming out, like, 3 months later.
Yup. It's not even that, like, huge of a story. It's just, like, a weird curiosity. Like,
I mean, it fills out the lineup for the rest of the year a little bit better. I think
it pads it out a little.
Yeah, I think they're a little scant. I mean, we do have cool stuff, and I don't think this is in the show notes, but Fantasy Life is going to have day one DLC, apparently. That's cool.
Hooray.
I think that game looks fantastic.
It's like Nintendo lastly,
Fable.
Huh?
It's like Nintendo Fable. I can't wait for that game.
Did Nintendo do anything with that, or is that just level 5?
It is level 5.
Man, I wish Level 5 had more of a presence in America, just in general.
I mean, they do. They have more of a presence than I did a couple years ago. But I think that when you're partnered with Nintendo, it's probably pretty good to just keep on rocking with Nintendo, because then like they'll market for you.
I just can't wait to see what Yo-Kai Watch does when it comes out here next year.
I mean, that might be the opportunity where Level 5 goes out on their own, because Yo-Kai Watch could be a big enough deal, but I would think that Nintendo will probably make it in Level 5's best interest to let them launch that...
Publish.
Yeah, to launch that game next year. And I think it's probably in Level 5's best interest to let Nintendo do the publishing. Just like how Square Enix will probably drag their feet on every other 3DS game till the end of time and wait for Nintendo of America and Europe to pick it up.
Sure. And lastly, the last big story of today. 3DS is getting home menu themes.
Yay!
Following a system update in October, Nintendo will be introducing new Nintendo 3DS home menu themes that change the menu background icons and folders and music and sound effects. Themes will be made available for purchase from a theme shop that will be added to the home menu. More details will be announced in the future. Some examples of this are an Animal Crossing one, where the bottom screen is, like, Animal Crossing'd up, like, the folders and stuff look all like Animal Crossing. You got Isabelle looking like Isabelle like, in the top screen.
All the folders and stuff are Animal Crossing-y.
Like, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Like, there's a green leaf and wood.
They have a Link Between Worlds one where all the stuff on the bottom screen looks very Link Between Worlds-y. And it's just very Link Between Worlds, like, route. And then there's a Famicom one that is pretty Famicom-y.
But that's the most adequate description you can get.
No, it was like, I mean, the way you said it was comical, but it's pretty accurate.
Right. It's like once you see it, you're like, oh yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it's Famicom-y.
What?
They Nintendo'd the shit out of it.
But I don't get like the Mario one. Like I'm looking at him now because Nintendo of America actually just tweeted about it a little bit ago. So like the Zelda one makes sense. Like the folders are treasure chests. Okay, cool.
I hate myself for it, but I'm getting that Link Between Worlds one.
Yeah, it looks pretty sweet.
Like, I mean, this just reminds me of the fucking Xbox Live themes that then went away when they did one of the system updates.
Yeah, right?
So all this shit that you spent money on, and it just went away. I think I bought a Rock Band one when I had my 360. And then it just like, oh, you got the dynamic theme. Now it's useless. Welcome to the Windows Surface Grid, bitch.
Yeah, they got a couple Mario ones. Like they have the one that's like 8-bit Mario, which I think is the Famicom one. Yeah. And then they have like that weird, like bold color modern Mario that shows up in every Club Nintendo accessory. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder how they're gonna price this. I would probably pay $4, maybe $5 if it's one I really like.
I was gonna say, like, I'm hoping $1.99.
Yeah.
If it was, like, Pokemon or a good Animal Crossing one, I'd probably be in. Like, I would only buy one of these probably ever.
Yeah.
Until, like, there's another great one.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm trying to think of what the themes were, how they were priced on Xbox Live. I think they might have been, like, $2 or $3. And I think that's probably what Nintendo should aim for. I wouldn't be shocked if they're, like, $4 or $5 a piece. I would be very shocked in a good way if it was like $1 each, but I think it'll be like $2 or $3 each.
It's got to be at least $1.99.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like they know these have value.
Yeah, they know people will pay for them, and I mean it's another revenue stream, which is why it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean we all kind of talked about how like we'll probably buy one of these dumb things.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing how I'll compare this to the 360 and the PS3. Just, like, that path, how PS3 and 360 wildly changed from the time they came out to now. The 3DS, as it was originally created, is now a completely different machine.
Very true.
Almost.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially with the themes, with the Street Pass stuff getting completely boosted, with the Miiverse, with the new 3DS that has a Circle Pad Pro XL built in.
Miiverse might actually be usable in the new 3DS, and it won't take 15 fucking years to get anywhere. Like, every time I use Miiverse on 3DS, it's a mistake, because I'm like, oh, maybe I'll post this screen. Nope. This took me 10 minutes. I'm out. I gotta go to bed now. It's late.
Well, it's clear they were updating it so severely that it was starting to do things the 3DS wasn't originally built for, and I think the new 3DS is probably making it at least feel like it was built for it.
Yeah.
So, that is it. Any quick closing thoughts? Does this build any confidence in Nintendo? Does this make you feel great about the holiday season, about early 2015?
Well, the holiday season, I don't really think much about the holiday season changed from this, because that new 3DS ain't coming out until next year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it could be a really good idea. I'm curious to see how it does in Japan. And that's kind of the first step, unless some crazy optimistic stuff happens, and the new 3DS comes out alongside Smash Brothers in North America.
Yeah, this feels like it was basically released, this press release and the Direct basically came out to give context to the rest of the year.
Yeah.
More than anything else, like, now we know what it actually looks like, not what it kind of looks like.
Yeah. I mean, that's what, I don't know, I mean, I'll either be proven wrong, like, shortly after you hear this, or maybe I'm right, but I think there is the more I think about it, I think there is a decent chance that the new 3DS could be coming out in North America alongside Smash Brothers.
Next month?
I think about when they announced the 2DS, dude.
Yeah, they came out quick.
They announced the 2DS and it was out within a month, I think.
What about Europe?
Sometimes it sucks to be Europe, just like sometimes it sucks to be North America when Layton vs. Ace Attorney comes out 6 months later.
Just ask any Atlas fan what it's like to live
actually,
in Europe.
I mean, probably by the time people are listening to this, we might know for sure, because Nintendo of America has not said one way or the other if it's 2015 or not. That's something that people are inferring, because that's what people heard for the European release of it. But if you look at the 3DS lineup for North America, pretty much nothing comes out. Okay, except for Layton vs. Ace Attorney this week, nothing from Nintendo comes out until after October. Whereas with Europe, like Fantasy Life is coming out in September. Pokemon Art Academy came out back in July. Whereas for North America, everything's coming out in October. And there's actually like three releases on October 24th. We did get a release date for Bayonetta 2 with this, and there's also Fantasy Life and Pokemon Art Academy are all coming out on October 24th. So there is a part of me that thinks that maybe it's an aggressive move because, you know, maybe the Smash Brothers fan base in North America is really strong and they want to try to, you know, it's like how Reggie pushed for the DS launching in North America first. It could be something like that. Or I could be completely and totally wrong.
How does this jive with you, Scott?
Well, to kind of go back to, like, if this got me excited about Nintendo, yeah, totally. I mean, even just Shulk being in Smash Brothers is, like, enough for me to be like, okay, like, I'm super excited for Smash Brothers again. I mean, I always go through that. Every time they announce a new character, I'm like, yes, this game's going to be awesome. But I'm bored with that.
The
Amiibo price.
2 weeks until the Japanese version. I can't wait.
I know. The Amiibo price is, like, perfect. That's exactly where I wanted it to be, so that's great. And, yeah, I will for sure get this new 3DS. Like Neil, I think it'll come out before 2015. Like, holiday season this year seems about right. I do wish it was coming out like with Smash Brothers for 3DS, because I would probably get both of them immediately.
I sincerely, the more I think about it, I think it's coming out October 3rd.
What when did the Amiibos come out? Was that in the press release?
Holiday. It's, I mean,
holiday.
Alongside Smash Brothers.
Which it'll be alongside Smash Wii U.
Okay, but not Smash 3DS, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that's when the 3DS will come out, because you'd want to have that Amiibo support for when the Amiibos launch. I mean, I know in Europe it won't be that way, but, like, if they can make it happen, I feel like they would. Like, what you would want to be able to use those Amiibos on every platform immediately, so.
Man, I hope I'm right, because there would be pretty solid evidence that, hey, I called this, and you can listen to this and notice me go through like, hey, this makes more and more sense as we record this episode.
Yeah, I'm excited for the 3DS. I'm excited for Smash Bros. I'm excited for Pokemon. But right now, Nintendo's future, I have no idea what to think of it. I have no idea if it's hopeful. I have no idea if it's bleak.
They're trying
right
shit.
Now, it's a huge-ass question mark.
That's what I really like, is that like they are trying some things that are a little bit out there. And that excites me.
Yes. And that will do it for this segment. All right. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to Neil and Scott for joining me. And as always, if you have any listener mail you want to send our way, you can do so at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. That will do it, guys.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.
And welcome to this segment of Connectivity. I am Scott Thompson. Today I am with Zach Miller.
Hey, Bill.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
And Mike Sklens.
Me.
Pretty good. So we are back today to revisit favorite boss and battle themes. The segment went pretty well last week. People seemed to enjoy it. And we got a lot of submissions of listeners' favorite battle themes and boss themes and everything like that. So many, in fact, that we can't include them all here, but we picked
a
handful.
That means we get to
do
another one of these segments.
This is just what the podcast is now. It's just turned into a radio station late at night where they'll just play whatever you request.
Yes.
like just college radio. So we picked a kind of a selection of old and new boss and battle themes to go over from a handful of listeners and some not listeners. So first, speaking of not listeners, we have a track from Mike Sklens, who wasn't on the podcast last week, but wanted to contribute his own favorite boss theme. Mike, why don't you talk about that a little bit?
This track is the Defender, a.k.a. the Black Knight battle theme slash boss theme from Shovel Knight. I like it because it is both old and new at the same time.
Now, it's the second boss fight, right?
Yeah, it's the first time it's a different track. This is like the real boss fight when he doesn't have like 6 health and is a total wimp. this is like the real time you fight him near the very end of the game. And this track is just, it's so damn good. It's like a Mega Man track had sex with a Castlevania track. And the most beautiful child in the history of chiptune. It's so good.
Oh, I like that.
This whole soundtrack is totally badass.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's really good. I feel like you could pick almost any boss theme, but this one in particular is really great.
Yeah,
I like the Explodatorium myself.
The Explodatorium's really good. This track, I like it when it hits that, I guess for the lack of a better word, like the chorus of it is so fucking good.
Yeah. The main theme.
Yeah, it's really good the way it builds and it just repeats on itself, and then it's got these crazy drum fills about like 3/4 of the way through it. It's really good.
Yeah, it's a super good track. It's a super good soundtrack. Like Jake Kaufman is maybe my favorite video game composer right now.
I think he's definitely mine. He had also had my favorite track in Retro City Rampage, which is, I think it was called Pulse Wave.
I didn't know he did that game too.
He didn't. A bunch of chiptune artists. Every radio station in Retro City Rampage is a different chiptune artist.
Oh, nice.
Which is one of the coolest parts of that game, in my opinion. if you can't tell, I'm literally obsessed with chiptune. You can tell probably because every 2 weeks that I'm editing the show, if there's if I get to use non-specific music that's not tied to a certain game, I'm always putting in a chiptune song between tracks.
I was just going to say, yeah, you know if you've listened to this podcast before.
Yeah. That's like, I was so bummed that I missed the first one of these segments because I like am in love with this genre of music so much right now. So I'm really glad I could be here in this track. I just thought was the perfect pick right now. It's my favorite chiptune track at the current moment. It's just so goddamn good.
Awesome. All right, well, let's go ahead and give a listen then to The Defender from Shovel Knight. Go. Very, very good.
Yeah.
So the next track we're going to move to, we'll give everyone a little peek behind the curtain here. This comes from Ryan Hutt, and he picked the battle music from Final Fantasy IV. And this was actually supposed to be included in the segment last week. We had Nintendo World Report staffer Addison Webb on with us, and this was one that he picked. But after we were done recording, we realized his audio crapped out like 3 minutes in and was just dead. So I had to completely edit him out of the podcast. So all mention of Addison is gone. All his picks are gone. Anytime he talked and we acknowledged him is all gone. You can still, if you listened back to that segment, you'll hear a few times where I'm talking to Zach and I say, so what did you guys think about this song? And it's just Zach. I'm not crazy. It's because Addison was there and then he wasn't. So he did pick this track as well. He specifically picked the boss fight with the dolls in Final Fantasy IV. That kind of starts off really slow and creepy, and then once they merge into the big giant doll that you have to fight, then the normal battle music comes in. So that's the one we'll play, that one with the creepy part, and then the transition into the real battle theme. But what do you guys think about the battle theme in general from Final Fantasy IV?
I liked it. I thought the fight itself was really freaking creepy.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't played the game, good music and a creepy fight. I like to see that.
I didn't like the creepy part of this song. I thought it was kind of but I really liked it when like the kind of classic sounding Final Fantasy battle theme kicked in. That was really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the Final Fantasy IV battle theme might be like my favorite 16-bit battle theme from all the Final Fantasies.
It's and really good.
I remember Addison saying that this is the theme that played when you fight Kullux in Mario RPG.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
That would not surprise me.
Yeah. We never went back and confirmed that or not, but they play one of the Final Fantasy boss or battle themes. But I think it is this one. I think that's right.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's really good. You've never played Final Fantasy IV?
I did not like RPGs as a child, so I missed
a lot
of them.
Well, I didn't play it originally, but I played the DS version, which is really good.
Oh yeah.
The only one I ever caught up on, because it's the most revered, was Final Fantasy VI, but I never finished it. Oh, that's not true. I did also play Chrono Trigger, and I played that front to end, and I really liked it.
I need to play more of that.
Yeah, that's your next assignment, which we'll get to that in a. In fact, we'll wait. We'll talk about Chrono Trigger in just a minute here. spoilers, it's coming up. All right, well, let's listen then to the battle music from Final Fantasy IV. Okay, there we go. We are back. So yeah, next up, on Twitter, we got a reprimanding from Mr. Jonathan Metz, or Dr. Jonathan Metz, Mr. Dr. Jonathan Metz. he ridiculed us for not picking the Magus or Magus. I don't know 100% how it's pronounced. I've always said Magus. Right. Yeah, so I always said Magus. But yeah, this battle theme is really awesome. And in fact, there's a lot of great Chrono Trigger music in general. I know some people have like come to retroactively dislike it, but even Frog's theme, I think, is actually probably my favorite.
I like Frog's theme a lot, yeah.
Yeah, it's really great. It's like super like heroic and just it's classic.
I also really like the, I forget what the name of it is, but the song that plays like when they're time traveling is fucking great.
Oh yeah, like when you're in
like
the,
I guess it's kind of almost like the world map theme.
Yeah, that it's like this like little like jolly like friendly little track that plays while you're picking what time you want to go to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good too. But yeah, he specifically wanted to do the Magus battle theme. He didn't tell us why he liked it, so sorry, Johnny. But it is really good, and I do enjoy it. Now, Zach, you've never played Chrono Trigger.
Well, I mean, I have. I've played it for probably 10 hours. I have it on DS.
Oh, you actually like started it and really played it?
Oh, yeah. I just got distracted by something else one day, and I just never went back, and if I went back now, I'd probably just have to restart it because I don't know what's going on anymore.
I think so.
I didn't actually beat it until like the third or fourth time I played it. The first couple times I made it to like the future, and then one time I made it to the part like right around where you get Frog. He's the last one you get, right? Or is it the Cave Girl you get last? What's her name?
Cave Girl's after Frog.
I got to her once. I think I got to the future once, I got to Frog once, and I got to what's her name, Cave Girl once, and then the fourth time I actually beat the game.
Nice.
Well, I think spoiler, I think you still get one other character after her.
Yeah, you get
Magus, actually.
You get Robo. I didn't mention him, but
Robo you get
before
her.
I think you already
her.
Have Robo.
Yeah, you have Robo you before future, her. Magus is the last character you get.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you get that other Magus. He's fucking great too. Great character.
I have not gotten to the part that everyone talks about.
Wait, what part does everyone talk about?
Where a certain character dies.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty late.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, relatively. That's probably, like, 3/4 of the way through the game.
Oh, okay. See, I thought it was, like, happened halfway through, and the rest of the game you have to spend trying to get him back.
No. I mean, you do have to. Well, and that's the great thing. You don't even have to get him back. I mean, that's
really?
You. Yeah, you can beat the game without him.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, because the game has, like, what, like, 13 or 14 endings? So one of them is, if you just don't revive him and you just beat the game without him.
Huh.
But you'll want to revive him. I mean, that's, like, if you want to get the real first ending, you'll want to revive them and do all that. All
right.
And do all like the side quests and stuff. Oh. But yeah, no, it's pretty late in the game that happens. So
cool.
Yeah. Great game. Yeah. If you do decide to like legitimately replay that, not even replay it, play it for the first time. I might replay it and maybe that'll be our game of the week.
Oh, that'd be cool. That'd be a good excuse for me to get back into it.
Yeah. I'm down. Huh. So, all right. Well, apart from all that, let's go ahead and listen then to Magus' battle theme from Chrono Trigger. We'll be right back. And there you go. All right. So now let's go ahead and jump then to a submission from our friend who's been on the show a handful of times, Donald Terrio, Donald Mick on Twitter. And I mean, he's probably not even Donald Mick on Twitter anymore, I think. I don't know. People change their names on Twitter so much, I can't keep track of it.
Something now, different now.
Right? I thought so,
too. Well, Shaman on the forums.
Yeah, there you go. I know, I've known this guy about, like, 8 different names. So his pick, which I had never even heard before, and I actually own this game and have just never played it, and it's actually very good, is the battle music from Final Fantasy Mystic Quest. So does anyone know, like, the story behind Mystic Quest and how it's related to Final Fantasy?
I think it's one of those games, like... I might be completely incorrect here, but I'm pretty sure it's one of those games where it wasn't really called Final Fantasy at all in Japan, and they just branded it like that over here.
Oh, okay.
That's how I felt. That's why I always thought about it.
The music certainly doesn't sound like a Final Fantasy.
No, the music is like a Mega Man X track.
Sounds like Mega Man X,
yeah,
exactly.
Like when I first heard it, I just had them on a YouTube playlist, and I like just queued them all up, and I forgot what they all were. So I was just kind of listening to them, and we got to this one, and I was like, I don't remember there being a Mega Man track on this list. Oh, it's a Final Fantasy track? Doesn't sound like it at all. It's a great, great song. It sounds like it reminds me a lot of the Flamestag music in Mega Man X 2.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's got that, like, that kind of, I guess it's just the guitar noise.
Rolling guitar,
I don't know what it was called in Japan. It says here that in Europe, it was just called Mystic Quest Legend.
At one point it was called Final Fantasy USA, which means it wasn't called Final Fantasy anything in Japan when it started.
Right, yeah. And if you look at the box art for it, it actually says, and then they have it here in the Wikipedia article, that it's supposed to be a simplified role-playing game designed for the entry-level player.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's supposed to be like an easier version of RPGs to kind of like get people into it.
I could go with that.
Wikipedia says it was designed by Square's development teams in Japan, but it was specifically geared towards a US audience.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Oh, that's probably really interesting. We all know what happened with Earthbound there.
Yeah, right. this theme really did surprise me, and it is very, very good, and almost makes me want to actually like throw this thing in my Super Nintendo and see how it is.
I don't know if it's probably that good of a game. If it's quote entry level RPG, it might be kind of boring, but this track is so good, and it makes this song is so good, it makes me want to play this game just to listen to the rest of the music in it.
Right? Yeah, that's how I feel. Well, here we go. Modern reviews, looking at the Wikipedia page. IGN, when it came out on the Wii Virtual Console, gave it a 6.0, which comes out to just being okay. They called the battle system repetitive and simple. And 1UP.com, which back if you remember the Virtual Console days, they basically would just do little mini reviews that basically said it's worth buying or it's not worth buying. Mm-hmm. And this was a not worth it. They said the game was hand-holding and insubstantial. But 1UP did praise it for the music.
Boom.
So there you go. Yeah, just listen to the music. All right, let's listen then to that music. This is the battle theme from Final Fantasy Mystic Quest.
almost wonder if maybe they specifically made the music sound more action and Mega Man-y in an attempt to appeal more towards the American market, where those kinds of games were much more successful.
Yeah, maybe.
Now that I know this little backstory of the game, I was trying to think earlier, like, when I was listening to it, is it the same composer? It's so similar. Like, what's the connection? And now that I know that it was in a game that was specifically geared towards America, it makes me think, oh, maybe that was a conscious decision to not make it all RPG sounding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds right. All right. So our next track, this came from Azeek on the forums. Let me see what he said. So this is the final boss music from Super Mario 3D Land. And he specifically said about it, he said that the final boss music in Mario 3D Land is amazing, but let's see. Oh, but the music is meh by itself. Maybe he didn't really want to play this one. I don't know. I didn't see that till now.
I didn't. I listened to the track. You know, I beat the game, but I totally forgot this track was, you know, what it was, and it's not all that great.
This track is, I don't remember it at all. It is literally forgettable, because I know I must have heard it, because I beat that game.
Yeah, I agree. So maybe that was his point he was making, or maybe he was saying something along the lines of, maybe it's, like, better when you're actually playing, but listening to it by itself really isn't all that great. Because that's how I felt, like, listening to it.
Yeah, maybe it fits with the game better. To be fair, I don't remember what the final boss fight in that game was like either.
Well, you were chased by a giant Bowser.
Right.
I mean, that could be like any.
And
of
I
the
guess in Mario,
games.
In Mario 3D World, you're the one kind of chasing Giant Bowser instead.
Oh, is that what it is?
Well, you know, it's that one where you chase him up the skyscraper as Cat Mario.
Oh, see, yeah. I haven't gotten to the end of that game.
Oh, sorry.
No, I don't care.
As if I could spoil a platformer.
I'm not going to beat it. It's I've kind of.
It's
had
a
my
good.
Fill.
It's a good final boss battle in that game.
It I remember is. The it's one of the better modern ones.
Yeah, I remember the one in Mario 3D Land, and I remember liking that boss battle too, but I really don't remember this music at all.
You know what? I might pull an executive decision here. We might leave this music out because, I didn't feel it was all that great. And I guess now I'm reading. I don't know why he linked it if he didn't like it. But I guess that's my fault for not really reading. He did link a million other things, but I wasn't really sure like what they were from. So I didn't pull any of those.
Yeah, I saw that.
Maybe this was like an honorable mention or something.
I don't know. Or dishonorable mention. Yeah. But I think what we should do, and I don't know if you guys know it, by heart or not, maybe you go listen to it real quick, but the final boss music from Mario Galaxy. You guys remember that one?
Oh, shit, no.
That shit is
awesome.
But
it was really good.
Yeah, because it's, like, super epic, and then it totally apes, like, One Winged Angel from Final Fantasy VII and has, like, people, like, a choir, like, singing in Latin during it. Oh,
you're
it's
right.
So good. It's so good.
And that was a good boss fight, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember
that whole game.
I never beat Mario Galaxy 2. Is it as good?
I still haven't played that.
What? What?
I only got three or four worlds in, and then I was just like, I guess I'm done.
Oh my god, you guys are killing me.
I know. I feel bad about it because I know it must have been good. That game came out the same weekend as Red Dead Redemption, and I kind of got sucked into Red Dead.
I mean, look, Mario Galaxy 2 is just more Mario Galaxy, right?
That's not a bad
thing. I like 2 better because I feel like they got really comfortable at that point with all the gravity bending and, like, perspective changes and everything. So I feel like they do interesting things in the levels. And I like that they cut out the whole little overworld. I know some people, like Neil, is very much into the little space station or whatever from the first Mario Galaxy. But I'm all about this one where it's just, like,
shit about that space
exactly,
the
where it's,
level.
Like, yeah, I'm not, like, running around going, okay, wait, which portal takes me to which world? I don't remember.
Right, we're off track.
I guess. So anyway, let's play that. Let's play that track now. Forget Super Mario 3D Land. You can go listen to the final boss theme if you want. It's just okay. I'm executive decision here. We're going to put in the final boss music from Super Mario Galaxy. So enjoy. We'll be right back. And we are back. See, isn't that good? That's good.
That's much
good
better. I like that more.
Infinitely.
But we will end on a high note here with another game I haven't played, but now I really want to. I mean, I've always wanted to, but... So this came from Soren on the forums. Pick was the final boss music from The Last Story. And he said, I want to give a shout out to the final battle music from The Last Story, if only because it was so hard it got burned into my brain. So I'm assuming he died a lot and just had to listen to the song over and over. But, you know, if there's a final boss thing that you're going to have to listen to over and over, this isn't such a bad choice.
I liked this track. It kind of reminded me really cool. of like a modern take on a Castlevania song.
Yeah, I love it. Kind of the antithesis of like the choir singing in Latin, like we just heard in that Mario track. Like, I love the whole like demon, like just like this like guttural demon that's going in the background, like two or 3 minutes to it, two to 3 minutes in. It's really awesome.
Yeah, I really like that. I liked it a lot at first, and then it changes into like a little more different demon voice. I didn't like that one quite as much, but the I do like it still in general. Just the it was, you know, like that. It just gives it all this weight. Like then there's when there's a choir in the middle of a song.
Yeah.
Right. I agree. And he sent two links. He sent a no spoiler link, which is the one I sent to you guys, where it just has like the, you know, the box art or whatever in the video. And then he did send a spoiler link. And I'm kind of interested if the last boss is some kind of like grotesque demon or something, you know, like if it's supposed to be, if that voice is supposed to like match up with the last enemy. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I want to play this game. It's hard to find now.
You know, I kind of kicked myself because I used to, you know, we have a Meijer around here, like you have Meijer up in Alaska, and it was like on sale forever at Meijer for like $40. And I always thought, I should get this because I know at some point it's going to disappear and be impossible to find, and I never did it. Let's go ahead and listen to the final boss theme from The Last Story.
Woo!
We'll be right back. Okay, there you go.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Nice. So yeah,
makes me want to go to Freddy's and try and find a copy.
Yeah, I'll have to check. I'll check Meijer next time I'm there and see if they still have it for $40. That would be awesome. I think I will buy it if they do. So that does it. Thanks to everyone who like enjoyed this segment and sent in music. And sorry if we didn't like play your theme, or if like we did with Zeke, we actually played a song you didn't want to play or something. I still don't understand.
We should. We need to do another one of these, but we should give people a different topic where it's not specifically boss music.
Oh no, for sure. Yeah, we talked about it at the end of the last segment that like if this went
favorite
well, people enjoyed
Mega
it.
Man X tune.
Oh, if we want to do just one, or maybe we could do just favorite Mega Man songs. There are so many of them. If you go through the whole galaxy
of
Mega Man games,
we should split it between Mega Man and Mega Man X.
No, I think just. I mean, if we're gonna pull like 5 to 8 songs total, I think we could do the whole gamut of Mega Man.
All right, I'll go with that. How about your favorite Mega Man track and your favorite Mega Man X track? One of each.
Sure, and then we'll pick and choose which ones we want to play.
There you go.
There you go. So if you give us two tracks, there's a better chance that we'll pick one of them.
That's right.
Bubble Crab will not be selected.
But I can tell you that at least 4 people will send in Mega Man 2 Wily.
Oh, I'll send in Mega Man 2 Wily.
For sure, right. Yeah.
Don't send in Mega Man 2 Wily. I guarantee it will be included. We'll put it on the list up front because everyone knows it's probably the best Mega Man song.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been my choice. Easy. So
don't send us non-Mega Man 2 Wily tracks.
And nobody cares about Mega Man 6 music. Don't even pretend.
That's right. All right. So there you go. That's the call out. Email us, or I guess you can comment on the thread, but it's easier for email. So just email us at connectivity@intelligiblereport.com. It's easier to track that way. Send us your favorite Mega Man and or Mega Man X song.
Or Mega Man Battle Network, Mega Man Legends, whatever.
No, goddamn it. Don't do that stuff. That stuff's bullshit.
It's bullshit, no.
Those aren't real Mega Man games, Mike.
Yes, they are. Battle Network.
The music might still be good.
Yeah, we're talking about music.
Your favorite song from the Mega Man cartoon.
If it's not good, it won't make the show, okay? I'll pass it.
Yeah, okay. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. all right. There you go. So thank you, Mike and Zach, for being here. Thank you, everyone, for sending in your choices. And we'll be back next time. Bye.
Adios.
Bye.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this bonus segment of Connectivity. I am Scott Thompson. Today, I'm joined by Amanda Albert.
Hello.
And Nicholas Bray.
Hello, Scott. I've got a Scottish accent now, Scott. I've got attack eyebrows, you see. I'm attacking things all over the place.
You know, but actually, before we even jump into the topic, which obviously at this point, if you know who's on this podcast, you know what this topic is.
Yeah.
We are here to talk about Doctor Who. The series premiere was on Saturday, and we've got a new doctor, we've got new mysteries, naturally, and all that jazz. So that's what we're going to talk about. It was an exciting episode. We were kind of talking about before we started recording how we were going to do this, and rather than go through like chronologically like we sometimes do with these, we're just going to jump all over the place, because I feel like there was too much going on to just go through like the story and the order that things developed. So let's just jump right in and let's talk about Peter Capaldi's Doctor. What did you guys think?
He was good. It took him about, you know, like half the episode until he sort of got going more as a more lucid doctor. Like the opening stuff with his sort of all crazy, like, I'm kind of glad that he was still sort of active, even though he was post regeneration. Like he just didn't fall asleep for half the episode. At least that has
my least favorite of the modern regenerations is when Matt Smith is just Tennant is just asleep the whole episode.
He didn't have a zero room. What do you want?
That's true.
But what was I going to say? The first episode, so I always find that on the first watch, at least for me, you're always anxious to get to the next doctor scene. So you sort of like wanted the story to push forward faster. And this episode was sort of counterproductive to that because it was twice as long as a regular episode. So it felt like the pacing was off. But on the second rewatch I did, you know, the pacing was a bit better and the doctor was like, you know, it all flowed a bit better.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like like you said, with this episode being longer, so much of it was focused on Clara and Madame Vastra and all that. That yeah, the doctor felt pushed to the side a lot of the times. But I enjoyed what we saw. Although I'm worried, as is kind of often the case in these first episodes with you know, with the new doctor, that what we see in this episode isn't necessarily what we're going to get as things move forward. I kind of liked when he was sort of manic, and I really enjoyed his conversation with the homeless man and how he took his coat.
Do you know who that was?
Who was it?
That was Elizabeth Sladen's husband.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Sarah Jane.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that. But I love that scene. I just thought that was so funny and how he ended up just taking his coat regardless and
He gave him a watch. It was a fair trade. He didn't just mug the guy.
He was in a hurry to get out of there. It smelled terrible.
Yeah. And it was just funny. Just, the man saying that he's cold and the doctor saying there's no sense in both of us being cold. Give me your coat. Just that kind of stuff. It was just a really funny comedic scene. And I thought they did a good job of establishing, some good, like, little humorous and comedic bits.
I found the new doctor. The scene in the restaurant, too, sometimes. He had that sort of Tom Baker sort of thing going on. He's not really focused on what Clara's saying, but sort of just, you know, thinking of other stuff. And just, he's off in his own little world sometimes. Like, yeah, got a bit of a vibe of, like, sort of early Tom Baker from him at the moment as well.
When he even made the joke about wanting a scarf and then saying that he would look silly in it or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is pretty good. But yeah, it's really hard to tell what he'll end up being because I feel like by the end of the episode, especially once they're back in the TARDIS and stuff, he was much more like serious and in control, which is fine. I mean, that's totally fine. But I did enjoy the humorous moments with him. So I hope he'll still... be sort of comedic in that way.
I did like the part at the end when Clara goes back into the TARDIS and he's sort of got his costume and stuff on. He isn't like dead serious. He has a bit of like jovial sort of smiles and, you know, he's not going to be dead serious all the time, which was good to see that sort of slightly lighter side of him after he sort of recovered and stuff. And speaking of which, the end scene there, what did you guys think of that?
Master!
What? I was talking about Matt Smith.
Oh. I'm jumping ahead.
Not that ending scene yet. We'll get to that.
The first
he said end scene. I'm thinking end scene.
Sorry.
I liked it. I thought it was good. And I'm not surprised they did it. Like, I feel like they were very careful this episode to kind of, like, I think they went out of their way to try to keep the, the women on Tumblr interested in the show in a number of ways. Having Matt Smith in the episode, like, reconfirming, you know, that's the doctor. It's okay. Like, you can go with him. He's me. And then the whole conversation with Madame Vastra and Clara, where she's basically saying, you know, like, he's let down his veil. You know, he was young to appeal to people. And now, you know, he's
to appeal to fangirls.
What's that?
To appeal to fangirls.
Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, that's what it was.
And then, of course,
Clara's
and then, of course, Clara has her whole thing where she's saying, you know, well, I'm, you know, that's not me. I'm not that, like, simple. I, you know, that's not all I'm interested in, which I guess is what they're hoping all the women on Tumblr will say.
That's the fangirl's response. They're like, hey, I'm here for a story.
Yeah. Mm. That's what they're hoping is the case anyway.
It is. I'm still here.
Well, you're kind of a super fan. Like, I would expect you to still be aboard.
Yeah, but that's any of my female friends, that's the only thing we talk about or have in common.
Is Doctor Who?
Yeah.
You got cool friends.
I have female friends?
Yeah, cool female friends.
But I will say, the thing with Clara, though, like, sometimes on the surface it felt like, you know, she should have already been used to regeneration and stuff. But, like, I guess she was just always thinking, like, this won't happen to me. Like, I'll always have my Matt Smith doctor. Is that where they were going with it? It wasn't necessarily she was upset about regeneration. It was just about the fact that he had changed at all. Like,
it's just very scary. I think not everybody is going to be Rose Tyler and be able to roll with the punches. That's an unusual individual that can just accept it and then move on to the next thing like no big deal. I think most people would be pretty freaked out. That's a weird thing to happen. And I think most people, they would at least be taken aback for a little bit and then move on, which is what she did.
Right, by the end, she's totally on board. And in Rose's defense, I think Rose got an upgrade, so I can understand why she rolled with it so easily.
Rose also had that untelevised like snippet where she was sort of questioning things and freaking out a little
right.
bit. So she had that, but I guess she didn't really have a choice because the doctor was like unconscious for most of it, right?
Right, yeah, so she was more just, like, with her mom and with...
I think she did discuss it with Mickey, sort of, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, we're not talking about that one.
It's okay.
I will say, with Vastra, and I sort of got rubbed the wrong way with Vastra in this episode. She seemed really domineering on Jenny and stuff, like, she was
I would agree with you,
her.
Yeah.
She didn't seem as progressive as she sort of... makes herself out to be either, you know, like,
right, we got like a weird peek into the relationship where like she's you know, working on her little evidence board and having Jenny just pose.
Yeah.
And
you know that they're married, right?
Yeah, right. Oh, I didn't hear that.
Mike and I just rewatched it before I came in here to record, and that scene where she's pouring the tea and she's like, great pretense. I was like, they have a really fucked up relationship.
Yeah.
It is dysfunctional on a level we don't know.
Yeah, and I think it has a lot to do with Vastra's age and stuff too, but
and
it,
her
the
being
relationship
a different
at times.
Species.
Well, that too, and like just her wealth of knowledge compared to Jenny. A lot of times the relationship almost does feel like almost like mother and daughter more than, yeah, wives
think,
than like equal partners.
I think also Vastra
she did pick up a dumb cockney.
What was that?
I just said she did pick up a dumb cockney, so I don't know what.
Yeah, that's true. What were you going to say, Nick?
She's also, you know, she's underneath. She still has that sort of semi look down upon humans like apes, you know, like she still has that sort of underneath all of her hiding behind her masks and stuff. Like she says
yeah,
one thing,
true.
But underneath she still has like a sort of jealousness or hatred towards humans on some level, I think.
A reserved judgment.
Yeah, maybe that's more like it, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That said, I still would love to see them in a spinoff.
We did take her planet, to be fair.
That's true. That is true.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, every time we see more and more of them, I just feel like, okay, like when are they getting their own Torchwood? Like it just feels like it has to happen at this point.
Oh, it just occurred to me, it's her planet of the apes. She's Charlton Heston.
Oh.
Yeah, she is too.
So, Nick, you didn't really say, what did you think about the Matt Smith scene?
Oh, yeah, I thought it was good. It sort of had the opposite effect on me. It was like, seeing Matt Smith and hearing him talk, and I was like, oh yeah, Matt Smith. And then it just seemed it seemed out of date. Like, you're like, oh, well, that's in the past sort of thing. I don't know. Like, yeah, I didn't really think it was super great. I was more like liking Capaldi's side of it more than the Matt Smith side sort of thing.
Yeah. It's good acting, but it just felt like it was unnecessary. Like, it's almost disrespectful to the actor that's coming in. Like, I think we can all come to grips with that we have a new doctor at this point. Not needed.
I think it would have been way funnier if this scene was, like, put in, like, episode 4 and he just called it that, like, he went too far. And she's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. He's old, so.
Yeah, we're fine now. We've been traveling for, like,
just hangs
months.
Up on him. See ya.
Yeah, that would have been pretty good. But you're right, and I think especially, I mean, I don't know about classic Doctor Who, but, you know, in the recent years, there's never been something like that.
Right.
With the exception of, obviously, just now when David Tennant came back for the 50th anniversary, but they've never really had to pander that way or do something like that where they have, like, a communication from the old Doctor.
No, no.
I mean, I guess the closest thing was near the end of Tennant's run having Rose come back, but even that's not really the same. So yeah, I don't know. Like I was fine with it because I like Matt Smith, but I do agree that it did, I guess, feel a little out of place and unnecessary. Like we're down with Capaldi, I think. Like we don't need constant reminders that he's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
What did you guys about the ending? So it was left ambiguous as to what happened to the sort of the robot cyborg guy. When did Capaldi push him off or did he jump?
I'd like to think he pushed him.
Yeah, I think he pushed him.
You think?
Yeah.
I'd like to think he did.
I think he pushed him, and he's going to justify it by saying, like, the robot couldn't, so he did it for him sort of thing.
Yeah, it's for the greater good. I mean, he killed Filch. Why wouldn't he kill that guy?
Yeah, he's killed other things before. Like, he wasn't strictly human either, so.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know.
It'd be a hell of a lot more compelling if he killed him.
Hmm.
I mean, it would be interesting. It would definitely take the Doctor in some new avenues. And I know they've said that this season's going to be darker.
I liked how he poured a, what was it, whiskey or something. You haven't seen what any of the new Doctors did, something like that yet.
Yeah, the last one that drank was 9. That was it.
He did, didn't he?
We didn't see him drink. Jackie was talking about him drinking.
Mm.
That's it. I mean, 10, I don't think ever did, and 11 just spit it out like a little kid every time.
So I did like that aspect of it, and I think that does reflect that it's going to become sort of a darker show, or at least explore some darker themes.
They'll develop a drinking habit.
About the Doctor's alcoholism.
Tangent. Do you think Time Lords get drunk, or do they metabolize it too quickly?
I think it would be, it'd be funnier if they couldn't get drunk, so he could just be, like, drinking as much as he wanted.
Well, he's got 2 hearts, so who knows, like, how many livers he has, right?
Maybe 4. We know he has kidneys, for sure.
Yeah. So let's talk then about the last scene, because I thought the last scene was really funny, because I know going into the season, the big thing I think Moffat said was that there weren't going to be season-long arcs, and then we end with, like, what seems to be a mystery that will probably play out over the whole season. Yeah. Which, that's okay. I'd rather have at least something that a story thread that follows through the whole season than just Monsters of the Week every episode.
Yeah.
I like that. I think it adds a nice weight and gravity to the...
When it's a good plot line, yeah, it's fine.
That's the big thing, when it's a good plot line, yeah. So we have, the robot wake up in what appears to be, or at least what he's told, is heaven. And we meet Missy, who says she's, what, the Doctor's girlfriend? So what do you guys think about that?
Well, either River gets a downgrade from wife, or the Master gets an upgrade.
Yeah, so you're convinced Master, as always.
Well, Mistress, I mean, it makes sense.
It's close, yeah. But yeah, I wonder about that. You know, is she friend or foe? Well, I think, I guess she's probably at least somewhat of a friend, because I think I saw a screen cap from some episode down the line where they're, like, walking together.
Yeah, they're being flirty. They're not respecting each other's personal space.
So, yeah, so they're friendly enough, I suppose. I don't know. So, but what do you guys think? I mean, do we need another girlfriend for the Doctor? At this point, I'd be kind of happy to go a while without, like, him having any sort of, like, love interest.
I don't think Capaldi's going to have any love interests at all in this. Missy's obviously some sort of demented sort of baddie, so... She probably thinks she's sort of, like, she says, oh, I'm his boyfriend, but we don't know what that actually means.
Yeah. Like, that's true. Amanda, do you have any crackpot theories apart from that she's the Master?
Not necessarily about Well, maybe it's kind of do with her. It was interesting to me that there was the they were on the SS Marie Antoinette, and it's a sister ship of the Madame Pompadour.
Mm-hmm.
And just thinking about the mechanical men, I almost wonder if it's like there's some early prototype of Cybermen, or if they're any way related to Cybermen, because I have seen screen caps of them filming the last episode, and it's missing a bunch of Cybermen.
Yeah.
And I know that she's involved with these, I guess you call them clockwork people, or the...
Yeah.
So I wonder if those have something to do with each other, or if there's some kind of one evolution of the other, or something like that. I mean, with Moffat's writing style, he's always trying to link shit up together, so it would seem like got her interacting with both of those things for a reason. It's not just a coincidence, really.
Yeah, that would make sense. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not related to this, but the Doctor did keep saying, like, throughout the whole interaction with them, that everything kind of seemed familiar to him. So, yeah, maybe that could be it. Maybe they are sort of prototypes to the Cybermen.
Well, when he was talking about what seems familiar is he was trying to remember before when he was on the ship, the Pompadour.
Yeah.
And the clockwork people. Because that's basically what was going on again.
Yeah. What did you guys think about sort of the bad guys in this episode?
I liked him in the last couple of scenes, like the main robot guy.
But
other than that, I thought the villains were pretty boring, really. Probably on purpose to a degree, because they're sort of meant to be like a throwaway villain, because the main point of the episode was the Doctor regenerating, so.
Mm-hmm.
I like him a lot. I'll tell you guys now. I've seen the second episode and the third episode because it's leaked.
Spoilers.
And from what I've seen of the season so far, I think the further you go in, the more that episode holds up, knowing what you know later.
Oh, that's good.
Okay.
I don't want to burn it. But they're really good, and the second episode is great. That's my favorite of the three that I've seen.
Oh, awesome.
It reminds me a lot. Did you guys ever like Eccleston's episode, Dalek?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It reminds me a lot of that. It's very good.
I was getting that vibe just from the trailers and the teasers of that episode.
Yeah. Capaldi reminds me a lot of 9 and 4.
Mm, yeah. Especially,
Spore could be funny and silly, but he could also be very stern and stoic.
Yeah, I got that 9 feeling vibe from him when he went to leave the bedroom and he went to the door and he sort of delivered it the way 9 would. Doors, no, that's not me. You know,
right?
The way he moved his head, it just reminded me of him.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I will say for the baddies in this episode, I did kind of like how, the main robot man there, his, livelihood or experiences sort of mirrored the Doctor. And, it allowed them to kind of explore some interesting ideas, again, tied to the idea of this being a new Doctor. I especially like his comment about the broom. You know, if you replace the handle and the brush enough, is it the same broom?
Yeah.
I loved
stuff
it.
Like that.
I loved it when he said, "Who frowned with this face?" That's my favorite line of that whole episode.
Yeah.
Well, because you think about what he's been in it. Did you guys watch Torchwood?
Yeah.
So
I haven't seen much Torchwood.
Because Capaldi was in that. He played John Frobisher.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was in the fires of Pompeii.
Yeah.
And Moffat had said in an interview that while he was working on Series 8, him and Russell T talked, and Russell T said to him, "Oh, by the way, if you ever want to know, or if you're curious, I always had a story in the back of my mind to explain why he was in Doctor Who and why he was in Torchwood, and you can use it." And Moffat had said, by that point, I was already pretty far in with the writing, and it won't be covered in Series 8, but it's a damn good reason, and it will be in Series 9. So I'd like to think that that's all them slowly setting it up.
Mm. I thought Moffat had said that, like, he was just going to sort of slip it in somewhere. He wasn't going to draw, like, a huge amount of attention to it, but maybe that's changed. Like maybe it will set up like a big sort of reveal.
I would like to think so. I mean, because they did that before with Colin Baker, too. He played a different character before he came on as the Doctor. Yeah. And it'd be fun if he explained it, because then you could just go back on your own headcanon and be like, oh, that's the reason that happened, too.
I'm fine either way. I don't need an explanation for why he was in Pompeii and why he's the Doctor. Like, it doesn't matter to me. When he was in the Pompeii episode, they had no idea that he would be the Doctor. Yeah. You know, this isn't like it'd be
yes,
one thing.
Yes, they
if
did,
it was
Scott.
Like,
they knew.
They knew years in advance. That
they
he
knew. They always
the
know.
That's like a Lost type thing. Like going back and just having some lame reason for like why the numbers exist and be like, that's what it always was. And
they
like,
never even fucking gave you a reason in Lost. That's the worst part.
Well, they kind of tied up. I'm rewatching Lost now. In the very end, they kind of tied to like the characters, but that wasn't in there from the start. They just
Such
made that
bullshit.
Up as they were going along.
Fuck Lost. Wasted so much of my life with that goddamn show and reading Lostopedia.
I haven't even finished watching Lost.
Don't.
You should. I think it's good. I think it's worth finishing if you've started it.
I'm judging you.
Listen, I was with you. Like, I was not impressed by the last season, but now that I've
rewatched the show.
I was
not impressed
show,
with the last three seasons.
But now that I'm rewatching the show, I kind of appreciate it more.
The last episode that was semi decent was Abby Turno, and then everything else is a pile of shit. I'm fucking so mad at that show.
Well, that's a conversation for another time.
Yeah. No, let's get into it now. The polar bear was the master.
Actually, instead of the
what
master,
the
I think
master?
You know it's a possibility that he could be bringing back the Rani. Like,
but don't doesn't somebody else own the rights to that? I thought that's why they couldn't bring it back.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, if that's the case, yeah, probably not happening. I just assumed that it wouldn't matter.
I say it's Romana.
Romana? Romana Mark
IV. Scott's silent.
Yeah, no, I know you guys are talking about something old that I don't know about.
Did you guys like Strax in this episode?
He's fine.
Yeah, I just thought it was hilarious. Yeah. I just love the part where he threw the paper at her face and she's just like, falls over.
For no reason! He just
yeah,
like...
that was pretty good.
It's just like, ah, Clara.
It was
I mean,
like...
he has funny moments. I love that he just cannot figure out like human biology whatsoever. Like, I loved when he was doing her little checkup. That was pretty funny. You know, and obviously the whole returning thing of continuing to call her boy.
It turns into Benny Hill every time he's on there.
He what?
It turns into Benny Hill every time he's on there.
Well, that's true, yeah.
It's like, he's not just dumb with, like, physiology and telling people apart, but he also can't remember what he called them the last time. So right. It's a memory problem as well.
That's what happens when you live and die over and over. It just
there was like
all
a pretty,
jumbled in there.
There was like a dark turn that Strax had, though. He was going to commit suicide in the near the
oh,
end.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to blast his face off.
I thought that was weird. I thought, like, with his race, you would want to die in combat, not, like, kill
yeah,
yourself
would,
in combat.
Yeah, that race would just keep going no matter what, like...
Right, and, like, welcome death.
Yeah.
I told Mike, wouldn't it be great if it turns out there were other Sontarans around and we just realized that he's actually got terrible vision? That that's it? Gets a pair of glasses and he can finally see? Like, the doctor could just give him Amy's glasses and then he'd figure it out?
Yeah, I would support that. That would be pretty funny. But yeah, no, I like Strax. I think Strax is funny.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's about it. So overall, I think we all enjoyed Capaldi, although I think like Nick said, we kind of need to see I feel like the second episode is where you really get a good feeling of what this doctor's going to be.
The second episode is
Amanda's already seen the second episode and she said it's her favorite, so I guess maybe we're in for good things.
Sometimes I just wish we could like skip over these first regeneration episodes and get to the real next episode straight away, because they're just like the first episode you always get like that taste and then you got to wait a whole week to get the first real adventure. So
yeah,
I don't know, next time maybe they should just regenerate and he's, you know, snap straight into it. He's not weeded out or anything.
I enjoyed it. It was a lot better. I liked it a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Hey, for fun, let's rate real quick. I guess there'll only be, well, I can only speak on three, but Let's talk about our favorite of the modern, or if you guys want to throw in the old ones, you can. Regeneration episodes. Where would you rate these? I'd put Matt Smith's first, this second, and then Tenet's third.
I think I'd have to put this one as the top one.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I loved Matt Smith's and the whole, because, I mean, while he was being zany, I think I really loved the stuff with Amy as a little girl and him coming back. And
that was the best. The best part of the episode, though. I found the stuff in 11th Hour, the actual story part, the plot of the baddie, I didn't really get into that as much, but all the rest of it was really good. So
The interactions between the doctor and Amy and the acting was really good, but I find when I go back and rewatch, I'm bored for a lot of it.
Yeah, and it's also like an hour long, so
yeah
it is another long one. That's true. Yeah, the baddie in that one is kind of lame. I guess I do kind of block that out, and maybe I would be more annoyed with that with rewatching it. I just think of, you know, he's getting all the food from Amy, and then he just how sad it is that he does come back for her, but he just messes it up.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad.
I know,
you see her there waiting.
Sitting there.
Yeah,
all night.
I know. But I guess that does mean I only like 15 minutes of the episode, so maybe I do need to reevaluate my choices. But would we all put Matt Smith's or David Tennant's last, I mean?
I would put David Tennant second.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed seeing all the companions have to work together on their own and figure out what to do without him.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
That's true. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Plus it's Christmas time.
You have this spinning Christmas tree.
Yeah, you got robot Santas. Come on now.
That's true. We can't forget about that.
Yeah. And David Tennant looked adorable in those pajamas, so.
That's true, his little striped pajamas, yeah.
Yeah, Mike has those now, too.
I don't want to know, like, what you guys do with those pajamas. Yeah.
Sleep.
So, anyway, that will do it. So, thanks,
will
everyone.
Will that do it?
That will do it. We're going
to
leave it
no,
there.
No, we
That's
must
what
go
on.
We must get to the actual length of the real episode. So we've got another half an hour or so.
I could go into my theory. I got a board all with all kinds of pins and strings. I can have Mike pose in the corner.
As I said, did you make Mike pose in the pajamas while you were putting it together?
Yeah, I got all kinds of theories.
I thought you were painting me.
Did you brighten the room?
All right, so that is it. Thanks, guys, for being here. I don't know, we probably won't do one for every episode, though we probably could. So maybe we'll come back, I don't know, will there be another mid-series finale where they'll take a couple months off? Probably.
No,
does this mean that Mike is Jenny?
Huh?
Yeah, I think, I would say he's your Jenny, yeah.
I think he'd be okay with that.
I think he would, too.
He's a pretty one.
But Nick, did you say there's no, like, finale in the middle, it's going to go straight through?
Well, it's 12 episodes straight through, so.
Yeah, they're not going to do that annoying thing where they break it up and drive
back
us
to
crazy.
The way it should be.
Yeah, that's good. So that will include a Christmas episode, though, right?
No.
That'll probably be one of the last
12
ones.
Episodes and then a break and then a Christmas episode.
Okay.
I'm looking forward
12,
to his Christmas episode. That should be fun.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, maybe what we'll do is, like, I don't know, so 12 episodes, maybe every, like, 4 episodes we'll get on here and we'll do something, recap what's been going on.
Or even just, after the 6th episode we can do another one and then, you know.
Yeah, whatever. We'll figure it out.
Do you guys have a guess as to what his, you know, every doctor's kind of had their catchphrase. Do you have a guess as to what his might be?
No.
I was trying to look for something he's consistently said in each of the episodes I've seen so far, but
he probably doesn't.
I mean,
might not have one.
The most I can see what it might be is that he tells everybody to shut up all the time.
Oh yeah, it probably will be that. That'll be one of his like big things he does all the time. Because even in the first episode, he does that a handful of times.
Yeah, the first thing he said was "shush" when he came out of the TARDIS.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll probably be it.
It'd be a little bit of Malcolm Tucker then.
Oh, man, we didn't even get any theories for who put the advertisement in the newspaper.
It's got to be Missy, right?
The Master.
Yeah. There you go. All right, we're wrapping up. Thank you, Nick and Amanda, for being here.
Thank you for tolerating me.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Let us know if you like these Doctor Who segments. And, yeah, we'll do one in 4 episodes or 6 episodes or every other
next
episode.
Next weekend?
Or every episode.
We should just make our own separate podcast at this point now. We can do it
properly. I would be down for that.
Do it properly.
Let's do it. Let's divorce this big podcast and do our own thing.
Insurrection.
Maybe you guys have to listen to me even more. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Theories every week.
That's right. Crazy theories. That's what it could be.
Yeah. It'll be a special segment on the show. All right. Well, keep in touch then and get ready for our spin-off Doctor Who podcast coming at you soon.
Yay.
All right, guys.
Bye.
We'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.